Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. There are occasions on this show, of course, where we bring on people who you've never heard of, who you might want to hear from again from all over the world, and, of course, those people who are kind of the trendsetters, if you will, those who need no introduction. Like my very special guest today, David Icke, live from the UK. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinny.
How are you today?
I'm all right, yeah. It's a nice day in Britain for a change this summer, and I'm speaking to you at a nice time of day, and you're speaking to me at something hell of a clock in the morning, aren't you?
It's 4 o'clock in the morning, known as the witching hour, but I did step outside earlier, and there is a stillness in the air that's almost eerie, and everything's brightly coloured from the moon.
Right. Well, that's nice.
Yeah. And I figured, what a perfect setting. Now, first thing that we want to ask you is just to introduce, for maybe those who are unaware, just about who you are and what it is you do.
Goodness me. How long you got? I was born in Leicester, England in 1952. I became a professional soccer player, ended that with rheumatoid arthritis, went on to become a journalist in print, radio, and television. Also, for a while, was a national spokesman for the British Green Party. And then I started on a journey about 1989, particularly 1990, uncovering who really controls world events, the direction they're going, why. And it's just got deeper and deeper and deeper as I've put the pieces together. And the world is not just a little bit different like to what we believe it is and what we're constantly told it is. It's absolutely nothing like it. And it's been an extraordinary, best part of 25 years now, in 50 countries or more, uncovering this stuff. The world is an extraordinary place, and most people in an entire lifetime only appreciate or are aware of a tiny fraction of it, because the system of what is bravely called education, the mainstream media, all of it, science, is structured to keep us in a tiny box of perception. Thus, we are easy to manipulate by the few in the shadows. And the vast overwhelming majority of those that are doing this every day, journalists, scientists, and all these other people in these institutions of the state, have no clue that they're doing it because of the compartmentalization of knowledge that is essential to ensure that a tiny few people, compared with the 7 billion plus we apparently have now, are actually aware of what's going on and why. Because obviously, the more people that know, the bigger chance there is of everyone knowing. And so we have this situation of the blind leading the blind. And in terms of the media, part of that is, and only part of it, because so many mainstream journalists don't think out of the box in any way, shape, or form. They think investigative journalism is reading the morning papers and watching the newsroom television. But in part, it's a situation where they know that if you cross a certain line or take a certain line, then there's going to be resistance. And there was a very good DVD produced about Fox News in America about the way that there is a list of stories comes down from on high every morning, tells the journalists and producers not only that these are going to be covered and these are not going to be covered, but how they're going to be covered and the line that's going to be taken. And anyone that wanted to take a different line, well, do you want another job or what? Because you ain't going to stay here long if you do that. And in the same way, scientists are funded and science is funded to keep us in the dark about the nature of reality. If you want to challenge the scientific mainstream, the song sheet, as I call it, well, forget your funding. You're not going to be funded. Forget any presence or profile that you're going to have in the scientific community, and forget being respected by your fellow scientists, because they're going to dismiss you and ridicule you. And so many people, genuine scientists, genuine seekers of knowledge, have been down that road. So the system polices itself in so many ways like this, and thus we can go through an entire lifetime being controlled by forces we don't even know exist. And if it was suggested, many people would dismiss the fact that they exist, when in fact they've been controlling our lives since we came here, and will do so until we sort it out. And we can only do that by being aware of their presence and their methods of operation.
Well, that's something I did in fact want to ask you. You said you've trekked around 50 countries, and I know a lot of people here in New Zealand and a lot of people in America who think, you know, I don't like the tyranny here in New Zealand, or I don't like the tyranny here in America. Maybe the tyranny in England would suit me better. Maybe I'd prefer the tyranny in Australia. We're wandering around which kind of tyranny suits us best, rather than trying to figure out whether or not tyranny suits us at all. And in moving around and seeing 50 countries, have you ever once stepped off the plane and not instantly been able to look around and recognize the symbols and the apparatus and the workings of the elite?
No, and you make a very good point. It's, you know, I was in Hawaii a few months ago, earlier in the year, talking, and a lot of people go to Hawaii to escape the system. And I was pointing out there that you can't escape the system. What we have to do is dismantle the system, because until we do, we can run for a while, but the system's going to come knocking on our door eventually, as it expands and expands its influence and control. And, you know, one of the most horrific corporations that are that is used and is an expression of this whole global network of suppression and control is Monsanto. And Monsanto have been in Hawaii for a very long time because they want to target the natural food production and the natural crop species that we have so that they can bring them down to just a few, which they control. And then if you want to eat, then you eat as a result of keeping the Monsantos and the other corporations happy. Otherwise, you don't eat. And so we're building this monoculture and this horrific genetically modified food, which is genetically modifying us. So you know, go to Hawaii, you know, sit in the lotus position. Fine, good luck to you. But don't think you're escaping the system, because the system will eventually find you. And that's what's happening in Hawaii now, and it's been happening for a long time. The fact is, when you look at this, is we're not looking at a network operating in one country. We're looking at something operating globally. So you're right. You get off the plane and you just see the so-and-so branch of the global control system. And what they've built, Vinny, is a secret society version of a transnational corporation. So if you look at how the transnational corporations work, they have a headquarters somewhere in the world, and they then have subsidiaries in the different countries, and the subsidiaries answer to the headquarters. So they have a corporate logo, they have a corporate blueprint on how they operate. If you go into a McDonald's in New Zealand, you're going into a McDonald's basically in America or South Africa or Britain or Russia, because it's the same blueprint, the same method of operation. And they have a secret society version of that, where the center, the headquarters, if you like, the spider, as I call it, is in Europe. It's in places like the city of London, Rome, Berlin, Paris, and Belgium. In America, to a very significant extent, but nothing like as big as you think, given the way it appears on the surface. And in each country, you have a network of secret societies and families, bloodline families, and their job is to introduce in their sphere of operation, their country, the banking, political, corporation, media, science, all these policies that are centrally dictated. And that's why when you travel around the world, you see the same thing wherever you go, and you see the same policies being introduced around the same time using the same excuses. This is how it's done. And it's trying to lead us down a road which George Orwell would shake his head and say, I underplayed it. You know, I didn't tell you how bad it was really going to be. And people like George Orwell with his book 1984 and Aldous Huxley with Brave New World. Huxley published his book in 1932 and Orwell, real name Eric Blair, in 1948.
No relation to Tony Blair?
No, I don't think so. But what they had a relationship to, Vinny, was a secret society in London, which is very, very kind of in operation in places like Australia and New Zealand and places like that. And it's called the Fabian Society. And the Fabian Society was created to, if you like, hijack what we call the left in politics. I mean, it basically created the Labour Party in Britain of Tony Blair. It created the Labour Party in Australia, etc. And if you can access these, the inner core, I emphasize that, the inner core of these major secret societies, you can access the projected agenda for the world, because this thing's not being made up in matter of years or 5 years or a decade or two. This is projected forward. They know where they want to go. And so you had a situation where George Orwell, Eric Blair, was a student at Eton College, where the Royals go, next to Windsor Castle, just outside London. And his French teacher at one point was Aldous Huxley. And Aldous Huxley introduced him to the Fabian Society, and that's where they got their information about this projected agenda. It seems that Orwell was opposed to it and wrote the book to try to expose it, and some researchers, they may well be right, suggest that he called it 1984 as a code because 1984 was the 100th anniversary of the Fabian Society. But it's Aldous Huxley supported it. I mean, his brother Julian Huxley was one of the major eugenics promoters, and the agenda that they describe has proved to be so accurate in the experience of modern times, not because their imagination somehow was right, but because they had a basic foundation knowledge of where this was supposed to go. And it's very simple. When you've got a projected agenda, this is why a lot of my books have predicted things that are happening today in great detail, like 15 years or more ago. And it's not prophecy, it's simply that if you uncover what a projected agenda wants to happen, if that agenda is not stopped, diverted, or blocked, then it's going to happen. And the reason that I do what I do, exposing this at every opportunity, is to stop it happening, to alert people to what's happening, to why it's happening, and the techniques used, so that we can cease to make it happen. But to do that, people have got to open their minds to a much greater vision of possibility, because one of the most effective and foundation ways that people are kept in this tyranny unknowingly and dismiss it if anyone talks about it is the suppression of the sense of the possible. This is so important. If, for instance, you have a sense of the possible that does not include the possibility that someone can be mind controlled to go crazy with a gun in a theater or whatever, or be mind controlled to be in the wrong place at the wrong time so that someone else does it, but you get the blame for it, then when someone like James Holmes or whatever is arrested and the cover story says ABC in the theater in Aurora in Colorado, because your perception of the possible will not encompass the fact it could be a setup so that you have an excuse to make changes in society as a result of what happened, which you wouldn't have if it didn't happen, then you have no, in your perception, you have no alternative to the lie that you're being given. You can't challenge the lie because your sense of the possible cannot encompass that which is needs to be encompassed to challenge the lie. It's the same with 9/11. If you cannot encompass a sense of the possible that these military intelligence networks, not just in America either, could orchestrate that and then blame 19 Arabs so that you can, as they have done for goodness sake, transform global society, take away basic freedoms and all the rest of it on the basis of a concocted, manipulated, engineered terrorist event that was actually blamed on the wrong people and ironically was blamed on the wrong people by the people who actually did it and continues to be so. If you do not have a sense of the possible that that could happen, you have no alternative to the lie, the official lie of 9/11, and thus that's all you have. So if we're going to start to understand what's happening and thus what we can do about it, then we have got to open our minds to a much greater span of the possible than we have now. And like I said earlier, Vinny, the education system, science, and the mainstream media, they are squeezers of the sense of the possible. And thus they are, and one of the reasons is because they've been squeezed in their sense of the possible. And thus they are creating a situation unknowingly, most of them, like I say, whereby people simply have minds too closed to encompass what's really going on, and thus it's dismissed and ridiculed.
And as we were talking about, like the list of different tyrannies that you'll find if you step off any aircraft, it's kind of like that scene in Pulp Fiction where they're talking about the difference between McDonald's in America and the difference between McDonald's in Europe and things like that. You know, they got the same stuff over there that they got over here. It's just the little differences, you know. For example, every prime minister, every president, they're basically cut from the same cloth. They all look really upstanding, nice gentlemen, don't they? They're all very suave. And they all come from banking backgrounds. Or they're financed by bankers. It's the same thing everywhere you see. And you wonder, back in the day when you started making all these predictions, just based on the obvious information that's there, the blueprint, you just wonder, I wonder how many of the things that I said would come to pass already have, and I wonder how many are yet to pass, right? And it's like the whole idea of whether or not it's possible for all of that stuff to be stopped or overturned or a new course to be cut, right? Because when you look at agendas like 9/11 and you understand the whole idea of false flag terrorism, well, it could be this, or it could be that, or it could be that. Whereas if you are somebody who has no awareness of false flag terrorism whatsoever, you're stuck without an or, quite literally. It's this. There is no or.
That alternative. You're absolutely right, because, you know, a closed mind does not do alternatives by definition. And this is why it's so important that people start to open up their sense of the possible and not believe everything, of course not, but to give it a chance to state its claim rather than just dismiss it by reflex action. The great ancient Greek philosopher Socrates once said that wisdom is knowing how little we know. And if we just hold that as a thought, then we can keep our minds open to other possibilities, because, you know, the idea that anybody knows it all or anybody knows enough to understand what's going on completely is ridiculous. We're seeking more and more knowledge. Well, some of us are. Some of us think we've already got it and therefore there's no need for it. And that, again, closes your mind. No, I've sussed the world. This is how it is. Thanks very much. Slap me mother. When I was a kid, you know, if someone knocked on the door, a religious, they say, no, we're Church of England. She'd done the spirituality. She'd done it. Church of England we are. Well, we weren't. We only went to church for weddings and not very often then. But it was like, there, I got it. You know, it's like, oh, no, I'm a Republican. I've sussed it. Oh, no, I'm a Democrat. I've sussed it and all this stuff. When these are just trinkets. To keep our minds occupied and focused so we don't actually lift our head and see what's really going on. So once you realize and accept that none of us know what there is to know, your mind's always open to other possibilities. But, you know, once you've got a rigid mind, whether it's a political belief system or a religious belief system or a scientific belief system, because science, mainstream science, is a religion. You know, and it's got its advocates and it's got its high priests and all the rest of it. Just another religion. It's not a belief system. What is a religion? It's a belief system. What is mainstream science? It's a belief system. And if belief systems are rigid and repel all borders, all other possibilities, there you have again the box of sense of possibility, and you're not going to go any further in your understanding. So we need a fluid mind. I call it the blank sheet of paper. If people would just put aside all preconceived idea, all preconceived belief, that's what preconceived ideas and beliefs are. They're interchangeable. They're just preconceived versions of perception. Put them aside, and from now on, let the information be your guide rather than preconceived idea and rigid belief and prejudice and all the rest of it. Oh, it's them Muslims. That's who it is. And all this bloody nonsense that goes on. And then you've got a chance of letting the information flow in a way that you can start to see that actually you didn't know it all. And there is more to know, a heck of a lot more to know about not only what's going on in the world, the direction we're going and why, but also the nature of reality itself and the nature of life itself, all of which is suppressed. Because once you start to realize the true nature of who we are, then you start to realize we're not little me. We're not powerless Joe Public and Ethel and Bill work down the store. That's just an experience. It's not who we are. So all these things, this tapestry of suppression covers a vast range of subjects, which the knowledge of which has to be suppressed to keep us in this box. And this is why, you know, my work and books and stuff just has this vast spectrum of subjects which it connects and shows that they're not individual dots as we thought, but actually just strands in a vast tapestry of control and suppression.
This is why I love mainstream media, because they scream out loud when they spot one single dot. But the alternative media is this thing that takes all those dots that the mainstream media see and connect them to create the full picture. And speaking of the full picture, have you noticed how almost every single movie plot known to man involves a bad guy on the inside who sets up the whole thing and winds up trying to gain control and get power over the world after being the person who got you in the situation in the first place, right? That is,
yeah.
Now, that's art. And what it's funny is, when people are looking at artwork, they don't realize that it is in part reality, if not wholly based on it. Because, I don't know, do you believe that people can think up things that don't exist or can't exist? Like Jules Verne, for example, came up with the idea of a submarine and a helicopter at a time when the technology didn't exist to build it. And yet, he was able to create it in his mind. Do you think, David, that everything that we are capable of thinking of can be possible?
Well, I think that comes down, Vinny, to everything is possible. See, in the end, one of the great ways that we're deluded in terms of reality and self-identity is we believe the reflection in the mirror is who we are. The reflection in the mirror is something we're experiencing. It's not who we are. What we are is consciousness. We are awareness. And I would say that we are a point of attention. If you take an infinite awareness, it can have a point of attention symbolically that is standing next to a wall, staring at a brick from about half an inch away. And it can have that attention span from there across the town to the top of the hill. And so that attention span, that focus of perception, tells you the nature of the brick that you, through your conscious mind, are actually staring at. It's a brick that's part of a wall, which is part of a house, which is part of a street, which is part of a town, which is part of a country, which is part of an earth. But if that span of attention was only suppressed down to the conscious mind staring at the brick, then how the heck are you going to work out where you are and what you're looking at? You're not. And what the system does, because on the inside, the deep, deep inside, you know, well deeper than the Obamas and the Keys and the Camerons and all the rest of it, on the deep inside in the shadows, this network of families that I talk about know this. And they know the way that reality works, and they know the way we interact with it, and they mercilessly manipulate that knowledge while suppressing it in the public arena. I mean, you know, how many times does the nature of reality come up in the education system? How many times, for goodness sake, when you've got like hundreds of television channels, how often does it come up in a television program? Who are we? Where are we? What is this reality? None of it's talked about. And at the same time, society is structured to entice and entrap the five senses. What it all about? Look at it. Ooh, taste this. Ooh, look at that. Ooh, feel that. Ooh, smell this. And all the rest of it to pull us into the five senses. And it pulls us in. The conscious mind, obviously, has to be there so that we can interact with this world that we're experiencing. But if we're only in the conscious mind, a perception of reality, then, of course, our sense of the possible, our sense of who we are, our sense of what's happening in the world is going to be tiny in its scale. And this is what the education system's there to do. Science is there to do. The mainstream media is there to do. It's to focus our attention on a tiny, tiny span of frequency, which science calls visible light. It is extraordinary how small visible light is, and visible light is the only frequency range that we can decode through the eyes into what we think is the world. Anyone that starts to see, if you notice, the system imposes its structure, its blueprint, but then polices it. So if you start talking about some of this stuff, you're mad or you're dangerous. You know, in China, they have this movement called Falun Gong, which it's into meditation, it's into opening your mind, opening your awareness to a greater reality. And it reached at one point, I think, something like 70 million people were involved. And then the state came down horrifically and still is doing so to crush that, because they're terrified of that process of expanding and opening the mind, because then you start to see it. It's like, whoa. You see, if you're staring at a brick from an inch away or half an inch away, that's a dot. And you're not going to know what that dot is or the true relevance of it. But you stand at the top of the hill a mile away, then you can connect the dots. You can connect the dots to the house, to the wall, to the street, to the town, and all this stuff. So that's what happens when you open and expand your mind. And that's why society is structured to suppress that mind into myopia. And see, if you look at religions, Vinny, what they're saying is, here's a book. Everything you need to know is in that book. Anyone who says anything different is wrong or dangerous or Satan or whatever. And all these belief systems, and I'm including the New Age and Buddhism and all this stuff. You know, I have a philosophy, simple philosophy. If you can tell me what you believe and give it a title, oh, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Christian, I'm a Republican, you're in a prison, because these are just labels for boxes. And in the world that we live, with all the financial stuff going on and all the protests and Wall Street protests and protests in Greece, I understand all of that. And good luck to them. But the answer will not be found if we just respond to what's happening through the conscious mind alone. What does the conscious mind do? Because it thinks physical. There is no physical. It's holographic, but they thinks physical. So something's happening physically. The banks are doing this, or this has happened to the euro. So I must respond physically by protesting and all the rest of it. Now, that's fine. But if that's all you do while keeping your mind closed, you're never going to see an answer. I mean, you know, we had the best part of 1 million people on the streets of London just before they invaded Iraq in 2003, protesting about the imminent invasion of Iraq. What did they do? They invaded Iraq. So we've got to open our minds and see a much greater picture. And I'll say this, Vinny, you know, In the conspiracy research arena around the world, that's what's necessary there too, because it's funny. I kind of observed many years ago now how symbolically people come out of the womb and they have a tent on their back in a backpack, and The question is, where are you going to pitch it? And some people come out of the womb and they pitch it immediately. So they'll believe what the media tells them. They'll read the paper and think it's true. And then some people go a bit further and they might be more radical in politics because they're questioning some of the official story of the world.
And then wind up pitching it in Zuccotti Park.
I spent 3 days at the New York protests in 2011 when I was speaking in New York, and the people there are a vast spectrum of left of center political thinkers who that's as far as they'll go, right across to people who have a much wider vision of actually what's going on in the world. So it's quite a spectrum of people which are called one name. But the point is that it's interesting to observe, Vinny, that where you are on the road with that backpack on dictates what other people think of you. So the people that pitch their tent immediately believe the media. Someone who's a more radical political thinker, they are seen as extreme by those people. But you go through that political level of looking at the world and you go into the fact that there's a conspiracy, then those that are seen as extreme by those further back, they now see you as extreme. And if you go through the what I call five cents conspiracy, only the banking scams and the political scams and the engineered wars and the engineered terrorist events, then those that are seen as extreme by others further back the road, i.e. the five cents conspiracy researchers, etc., they see you as extreme. They see you in exactly the same terms. Again, we're coming back to at what point do you close your mind? And, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy research, not least in the United States, that is imprisoned by religious belief or it's imprisoned by political belief. And thus, for me, the information is the guide. I'm not going to censor information. If information takes me down this very strange road, I'm going with it. Because I want to know what's going on. I don't have a belief system for sale or to protect, because I just want to know what's going on. So if you have a religious belief system, or you have a particular political belief system, or even a scientific belief system, or no, it's just how it works, then when the information comes to you that is actually questioning that, you ain't going to go there. You're going to say, oh, no, that's a load of rubbish, that Ike's mad and all that stuff. Or, no, I'm not going there. Or you might think, well, it makes sense, but I can't say it. What will people think of me? Because it's much stranger than even what I'm saying about the conspiracy. So the conspiracy research movement, too, has to open its mind. Yes, it's opened its mind further than most to encompass the fact that, hey, the world's not like we thought it was, but the world's nothing like we thought it was. We need to encompass the bigger picture, because only then will we understand and grasp what we need to do to bring an end to it. Because
it's kind of like to me that we're hanging by a thread on the edge of a cliff, and somebody's telling us, "Don't worry, let go, you'll be all right." That's what our religious beliefs are. That's what our current life ideals are. And it's the information that's telling us to let go of it.
Yes. Well, you know, if we don't go in another direction in terms of the way we look at the world and the way we therefore see a way to go forward to bring an end to this, then what's going to happen is the same's going to go on. I think it was Einstein who said words to the effect of the definition of insanity is to do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So we've been down this road. I mean, I'm seeing as I'm speaking now, I'm seeing a picture of a scene from The Matrix when he's in the car and he wants to get out of the car quite early in the first Matrix movie. And the lady says to the character Neo, look, you've been down that road. You've been down that road. What's the point in basically going down it again? You have to go in another direction, and we do, and that includes the way we allow ourselves to open our minds to greater possibilities without dismissing them immediately, because they're so different to what we've been programmed to believe. Because this conspiracy, Vinny, is far deeper. The rabbit hole is far deeper than if you like, mainstream conspiracy research is going. I'm not knocking it. We need that. I do enormous amounts of it myself, and I've done all these years. But if we only do that, we've not even entered the rabbit hole, in my view, to any length at all. We're still walking around the outer rim. Rabbit hole deep. And in that lies both the depth of what's going on and also the answers to changing what's going on. Because, you know, symbolically and in many ways almost literally, if you don't like the movie, you don't stand on the stage of the movie theater and start screaming abuse at the movie, do you? And telling it to change and telling the people to say something else or do something else. That people think that would be crazy. If you want to change the movie, you've got to go back to the projector and you've got to change the reel. Yes. But that's what we have to do. Because in so many ways, protests in and of themselves, not as part of a much greater package response, but protests in and of themselves are just like standing on the movie theater stage demanding the movie is changed when the movie's already a done deal.
I have a perfect illustration of how protesting can be done two different ways. Just this weekend, David, a bunch of protesters were outside the New Zealand Army headquarters saying, blood, blood, blood on your hands. Okay? What did they achieve? Nothing. About an hour after that protest left, myself and my friend Penny Bright went up there with our 100-watt megaphone, one camera, one banner. And we talked about how much heroin trafficking is going on over there, and how New Zealand's soldiers are now being used to protect the dope runners in the CIA. What did we achieve? Thousands of hits. And the truth was actually spoken, and everybody inside that building heard it. And it was only 10 minutes it took us to do that whole thing. This is what people need to realize, that repetitive chanting with no information is a waste of time. Telling people something that they haven't heard before is almost the only information worth spreading.
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on, and people think good of themselves. Oh, yeah, that told them. And then they go down the pub and think, yeah, that's great. But nothing changes. And this is where I'm going when I say, doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same result is insanity. Because how many times, how many protests have there been, but how much change has there been in response to the protests? Virtually none. And there's two things for me. There are many deeper things, but two things for the conscious mind, if you like. One is exactly as you said, we need to communicate information so people become more informed about the world they live in. And also, we have to cease cooperating with our own enslavement. You know, when you look at more than 7 billion people on the planet and you break down this compartmentalized pyramid of families and levels down to its core or its capstone pyramid, if you like, you're looking at a tiny number of people in full awareness of what they're doing and why and the background to it. And it's like, you know, it's not even the tail wagging the dog. The tail's wagging the freaking elephant. That's the scale and more in terms of the numbers doing it ultimately in full knowledge and those suffering the consequences of it. And this is why the system has so many manufactured fault lines through which we're divided and ruled. So, for instance, I mean, in Israel, you've got a situation where the people's financial state of the many of the people are so bad. They had last year 400,000 people on the streets of Israel in protest in a country of less than 8 million. Why? Because the hierarchy in Israel is taking the money and all the billions that come from American taxpayers every year, and they're doing it to fund the military and to fund themselves. So then you've got the Palestinians, and they are oppressed people, you know, not just by the Israeli regime, but the, you know, there's a lot of manipulation of them goes on among some of these Palestinian groups as well. And then you go to Britain, and you've got the population there being oppressed by their government and the people in uniform that impose the will of their government. You've got disaster beyond measure in Greece, places like that. People committing suicide because in large numbers because they don't see any hope. People giving their children away in Greece because they can't feed them. I mean, this is what's happening. In Israel, at least two people, to my knowledge, in the last few months, have actually, Israelis, have set themselves alight and killed themselves in protest of what's happening there. And then you look at the religions, and when you go deep into it, you find, in the end, the same force that controls Islam, controls Judaism and that stuff, controls Christianity, controls Hinduism and all the rest of it. So what we all in the human family, be it Jewish, Christian, black, white, or sky blue, flipping pink, are all being oppressed and suppressed by the same force under different names wearing different masks. And we need to come together and put those fault lines down, because if we don't, we'll be divided and ruled into a tyranny that is a nightmare beyond imagination almost, because that's where they want to take us. And so, again, when you start to open your mind to what I call consciousness, as opposed to just body-mind sense of reality, conscious mind, you start to see that these apparent fake divisions of color, race, politics, and religion, all the rest of it, they're just nonsensical. They're there to divide and rule us, so we're fighting each other, and thus not seeing that the strings attached to the Christian are the strings attached to the Muslim, to the Republican, to the Democrat, are actually being held by the same people. This is the Rubicon of perception we have to cross if we're going to bring this to an end. And we need to stop cooperating with our own enslavement. You see, because there's so few compared with the target population, they have to recruit from the target population for their uniforms and most of their dark suit administrators of this system. And they have to divide rulers so that they're not dealing with us en masse. They're getting us fighting among ourselves. So, you know, you can, when you have a situation you want to change, you can find a solution, and we're drowning. And that just leads us to another problem, which leads us to another solution, which leads us to another problem. Or you can remove the cause of the problem. And the cause of the problem is basically the closed mind, so that we'll not encompass actually what's really going on. Being divided and ruled, therefore fighting each other and not seeing that we're all controlled by the same force. And ceasing to cooperate with that enslavement. You know, if you had a herd of sheep, a big herd or flock of sheep, like hundreds of them, like they do, if the sheep stop following the one in front, and the sheep at the front stop following the shepherd and succumbing to the fear of the sheepdog, then the shepherd and the sheepdog, symbolic of the dynamic in terms of numbers between the controllers and the controlled that we're talking about, then the controllers have no power. Just by sheep going off in their own direction instead of going where they're told without question, it's all over. The shepherd has no power. And then he sends the sheepdog to round them up. Well, the sheepdog has power because the sheep have fear of the sheepdog. Remove that. It's gone. It's very simple to bring an end to this in terms of the dynamic.
But it's about, ultimately, the end to the dynamic is about having no fear.
It is. And there are many reasons why fear has to go. It depends how deep we want to get into this and how deep in the rabbit hole we want to go. Because
as deep as it can get.
Well, let's go that way then. Because one of the things that, you know, is even massively in the conspiracy research movement, you know, I'm kind of a maverick within that. And one of the things that people dismiss me for and laugh at me for and all that stuff, ridicule me for, is because I'm saying that this network, this control system, is not only a human control system. It goes beyond humans. I wouldn't say it goes necessarily kind of off planet, because that gives the connotation of it's true, but it gives the connotation of physical extraterrestrial beings and that stuff. And of course, isn't it funny? Have you noticed this all over the world? Whenever you talk about non-human entities, the mainstream media say he believes in little green men, you know, and all that stuff. It's oh dear, they're like children. But
because they haven't got that possibility.
And when you look at the scale of what's going on, the universal nature of it, everything from manipulating the banking system, controlling the corporations, manipulating the political system, engineered wars, engineered terrorist events, controlling the media, putting stuff in food to suppress and suppressors, genetically modified food, stuff in the water supply. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. There's no way that all this is orchestrated and all the different strands coming together so perfectly almost. By people sitting around a table deciding their next move. This is much bigger than that. It's much deeper than that. And that's why we need to get some appreciation of the nature of reality before we can understand how they're doing it. And if we don't understand how they're doing it, we can't understand how to stop them doing it. All these things go together. And these entities that don't operate in our frequency range and our atmosphere overwhelmingly. They operate in other frequencies of existence, because
people talk about dimensions like there's 1D, 2D, 3D, 4. Who says there isn't 4D, 5D, 6D, 7, all the way up to 11 or 20 or 900 or whatever? We're just not capable of decoding each and every dimension as we're going through it.
Yeah, the thing is about, you know, we've got human language, and that human language is limited in terms of describing these concepts, because these concepts don't exist according to the mainstream. Thus, the language has not been developed, certainly in the modern world, to actually describe them. So you have to start inventing things, and you have to start, you know, creatively using analogy to get across what you're saying, and basically bring it down. Dimensions, give it whatever name you like. It's the seen and the unseen. That's what it is. And our conscious mind is the scene as we perceive it. And all that is a frequency range called visible light, which is absolutely tiny. This is mainstream science now. And so anything operating outside the frequency range of visible light, we are not going to see, because it's like being on Radio 1 and you're not going to hear Radio 2. You can be on Channel 9 and you're not going to see channel 10. You have to change the frequency of that which is decoding the information so that you can then switch to channel 10. And therefore, we are actually aware of the conscious mind of an infinitesimal fraction of what there is to see in this universe alone, behind all the other levels of reality in this infinite reality that we actually live in. And therefore, if there are entities, and there are, that are manipulating human life, that operate outside of visible light, then we are not going to see them. However, we only see and perceive the visible light level of the human body. Thus, we only see what we think is physical. Actually, it's holographic. There is no physical, as even quantum physics has shown very clearly. But if you go deep into the human form, the human body, beyond the confines of visible light, you are going to go into electromagnetic and other energetic levels of the body, which are operating and interacting with the electromagnetic field of the Earth and these other energetic levels that we can't see. And this is what we call the subconscious mind. Why do they call it subconscious? Because we're not consciously aware of it as we are, or think we are, through the conscious mind. So, what goes on in the conscious mind? In the unconscious mind, rather. I mean, what goes on there? I'm asking you, this man who's dismissing all this. I'm asking you, this lady who's laughing. Tell me what goes on in the subconscious mind. Well, I don't know, because it's subconscious. Exactly. You are aware of a tiny fraction of all possibility, and you are telling me that this is not possible, and that's ridiculous. You're clueless. So why don't you open your mind, and let's look at the possibilities, instead of dismissing it by reflex action and making yourself look silly when you break it down. And entities exist which operate in these electromagnetic and deeper energetic levels. Now, if they can manipulate us in that subconscious level by putting information, concepts, thoughts, emotional responses into them, then that filters through from these subconscious levels into the conscious mind and into the conscious feelings, at which point we believe that we've just had a thought, we've just had an emotional response. But is it us, or is it something that's been inserted? Because if anyone thinks this is, oh, this sounds crazy, well, hold on a second. What about subliminal advertising? Subliminals in general. I mean,
perfect illustration is, okay, if you don't think any kind of image stimulates the human brain, you know, without you being able to do anything about it or whatever, put a picture of an incredibly beautiful naked woman in front of a heterosexual man, there is an instant response. There is no protection from it. The mind has no firewalls. Whatever you see is instantly taken in and absorbed and reacted to.
And there's something else in the same analogy. If you think of it without a picture for the conscious mind, just think of it, and people have responses to things they're thinking about, because the subconscious mind doesn't understand time. That's something for the conscious mind. That's an illusion too, but it responds to a thought as if it's really happening. The thought and something really happening, thinking it really happening on the level you're thinking, but it responds in the same way. And what's happening is this world is being manipulated by energetic entities that are manipulating the way we think and perceive. It's a perception conspiracy, which through the perception becoming behavior becomes the conspiracy that we see and the human behavior that we see. And if you look around the world, Vinny, the different cultures, you find ancient cultures and what have you, you find these entities being described often in great detail under other names. You know, you have in Sumer and what is now Iraq, Mesopotamia, the Sumerian writings talked about the Anunnaki. They talk about serpent gods. The Zulus talk about Chitahuri, children of the serpent. The Hopi talk about snake brothers. Many people talk about star people. Christians talk about the demons. And the Gnostics, who were a very, very advanced group of thinkers that were responsible for the Great Library at Alexandria, which was destroyed in the early centuries AD by the Roman Church.
After the Roman Church stole all the good books for themselves and kept them locked away.
You know, if their hair's not curled, it would curl if they saw some of the stuff they've got in the vaults of the Vatican in terms of ancient knowledge of things that we're only just discovering now and some we still haven't discovered in terms of cosmology and all this stuff. And the Cathars in southern France that were again destroyed by the church, their last stand at a place called Montségur, a castle at Montségur, I think 1244, I think it was. And what happens with these Gnostics, which is a word meaning knowledge, is that they had a certain worldview. And what's interesting is that when you look at that worldview, it mirrors, you know, what I've been saying for years. I mean, and they were centuries and centuries and centuries ago, and yet what I'm finding out is what they were saying. And then you have the fact that whenever the Gnostics started being in any way successful in circulating their knowledge and their worldview, they were slaughtered in the most extreme and grotesque manner. And fortunately, and of course, their writings and their knowledge was destroyed or put under very strong lock and key. But in the 1940s, there were some Gnostic writings found in Egypt in sealed jars. And in more recent times, you know, this information has started to circulate. And these Gnostic writings, there were what they call codices and texts and stuff. A fifth of them were about entities which were mind parasites, they called them. Called archons. They called them archons. It was a Greek name for it had the connotation of ruler or authority, and also seemed to have a connotation in some ways of from the beginning, like they've been around from the beginning.
Like oligarchy and evilarchy and what have you, archon. Huh?
Monarchy and hierarchy, which is exactly the way that these entities operate through manipulating the human mind. They're about hierarchy. Look at the world. Hierarchy. Look at the monarchy. Look at the world of Queen Elizabeth II and this royal family. This goodness knows is still the Queen of New Zealand and Australia, Canada. What's going on? When are we going to grow up?
Yeah.
And when you look at them, it's all about hierarchy in the most extraordinary way. You know, just
see,
after
I call it the evilarchy. It's a mixture between evil, an oligarchy, and malarchy.
Yeah, and you know, anarchy is the one, which is basically what we have in so many ways, masquerading as structure. But when you look at after the Diamond Jubilee rituals in Britain, we had rituals galore in Britain this year with Olympics and everything, but the Queen and announced a new order of hierarchy within the royal family, telling who has to curtsy and bow to who. And this Kate Middleton, who's married to the heir William. To the throne, one of the next heir to the throne after his father, William, she was told that she had to now suddenly curtsy in the presence of the two children of Prince Andrew. But the wife of Edward had to curtsy to her and all this rubbish. This is the obsession. I've been going on about it for years. They have an obsession with hierarchical structures of power. The Gnostics talk about this hierarchy and this control system coming from these mind parasites. And the writings also talk, and this is so fits so magnificently into my stuff over the years. They talk about the fact that these archons have the ability to transmit a false reality, to make it seem that something is when it isn't, and to make it seem that it's happened when it hasn't. And this is what we call today virtual reality, and this is what this reality is in its own way. It's a virtual reality universe, and they've hacked into it by hacking into, in many ways, there are other ways they've done it too, but hacking into the human mind and perception and the way we decode reality. And these archons are said by the Gnostics to be controlled by something called the Demiurge, which relates 100% to the Christian Satan and the devil, and also to the Judeo-Christian Yahweh Jehovah. And you start to then see who the horrific, threatening, bloodthirsty God of the Old Testament really is. These archons and this demiurge, and these writings of the Gnostics talk about this demiurge in terms of it being absolutely demented, and in terms of it setting itself up as a fake God, a fake creator. They also talk about the fact that this archon network of entities controls the inorganic, solar system, the planets outside the Earth, and the Earth is so different because it hasn't been controlled by these archon entities, when you then look at the writings and the beliefs,
does that mean that these archons are so obsessed with control that the Earth is one place that they haven't yet been able to figure out how to control, and that's why they're so obsessed with it?
Well, what the Gnostic writings say, and like I say, you know, I'm not going, oh, the Gnostic writings are this and therefore it's all true. You start playing this out, as I was just going to say, to other cultures around the world, and you see the same thing recurring. The shaman of Central America, talker, you can see this in the books of Carlos Castaneda and his Central American shaman source, Don Juan Matos. Where he talks about what Matos calls the flyers, and he talks of them in precisely the terms that the Gnostic writings found in Egypt talk about the archons. He even talks about them in exactly the nature that they're inorganic entities, and they lack. This is the common theme, Vinny. When you put it together, they lack what has been translated from the Gnostic writings as intentionality, but I would put it this way: they lack creative imagination. They cannot create in and of themselves. They are extremely limited, and these writings say that they absolutely have this fierce envy of humans for the potential we have for creative imagination.
Yeah. I was going to say, because not having the ability to create, that sounds like the direct antithesis to everything that defines humanity.
Well, yes, exactly. So they have not the ability. Put it this way: this is how I think I can say it simply and encompass what is being said about them. Give them a blank sheet of paper and say, create something, no chance. Give them a sheet of paper with lots of creative stuff already on it, and they have the ability to twist it, to invert it, and to distort it. And so what they're doing is they are twisting and distorting our reality, which is not being created by them. I mean, some people say that, you know, the Anunnaki created the human body. And people have actually quoted me as saying that. I do not say that. I say they have manipulated the genetics of the body that already existed. They have inverted it. They have distorted the way it decodes reality. They're not created it from scratch. And thus, this is so important. People say when I've talked about these entities, why don't they just come in and take over then? Well, simple answer, they can't. Because they're, one other common theme about these entities is they're terrified of human potential, and they're really terrified about humans waking up and remembering, in the, you know, the words, the title of my lady's book, remembering who they are, because then it's all over. It's game, set, and match. And so what they have had to do, and look around us, mate, they have had to manipulate us to build our own prison. And that's what we're doing. I mean, look at all these people, these TSA people, and these troops that bomb and slaughter, and look at all the police increasingly being recruited for their personality type, which is why we've had this great personality transformation of policemen around the world into antagonistic bullies in so many cases. Narcissistic, sociopathic, psychopathic people. It's been done systematically because they've just made sure the application forms and the job application system gleans the personalities they want, and then they give the job to them rather than someone that would do it properly.
One of my favorite articles of all time was the one where they had an upper limit on the IQ of police officers. If you were too smart, you weren't allowed in.
That's lovely. Well, that's classic. I mean, that's classically exactly what I'm saying here. They have systematically targeted personalities that will do the job in a certain way. And that's, like I say, all over the world, the police are being transformed. They're transformed in America. They're being transformed in Britain. And I'm sure, you know, that people around the world will have seen it wherever they are. But so what they've had to do is manipulate us to build our own prison. Crucial to that is to manipulate our perception of self and our perception of the world and our perception of reality. Without that, they couldn't do it. So what they've done is they have squeezed our sense of the possible. They've squeezed our point of attention basically into the five senses, and through manipulation of reality like 9/11 and what I call these problem reaction solutions, create the problem, offer the solution, you have yourself created. They have transformed society into this whole Orwellian state, which is what? If there's a few of you and you want to control the many, you have to centralize decision making. The more points of decision making there are, the more diversity of decision making, the less control any few are going to have over the many. So we've had this incessant centralization of power in political decision making, in media ownership, in corporation ownership,
in everything.
Everything, exactly. It's what we call globalization. It's they give it a name long ago. So this is what they're doing, and this is why they want a world government, a world central bank, a world army, a world currency, that structure that I've been and others have been talking about for so long.
I wonder who the world leader will be.
Well, whoever it will be one of these archontic entities in human form, because that's what we have. You see, one of the many character traits of these entities is that they lack empathy. They lack heart. And what do we say about these people doing these horrendous things in the world?
Psychopathy.
And we call them heartless. Well, that's what they are. They have no empathy. I've been trying to get this across to people for so long. Don't judge what these people will do by what you will do, because they're not like you. You not look into the eyes of a child and abuse it and terrify it and torture it, because your empathetic response would be too much for you to bear. If you do not have an empathetic response, then there is no limit to your actions. 3,000 dead on 9/11, no problem. That's actually quite funny. We did a good job, boys, didn't we? You know, pepper bombing Tripoli and Baghdad, no problem. Hey, do you see? Oh, that was a big one. Just went off. This is what we're dealing with. They have no empathy, have no heart. So, crashing the global economy and causing this absolute desperate suffering in places like Greece, it is not a problem to them. It's just a means to an end. They're not like us. And there's another thing here, or two things. They are described in what we would call robotic machine-like terms. And in so many ways, the machines portrayed in the Matrix movies that were creating that fake reality that was called the Matrix to hold people in servitude, daily living in a world they thought was real but wasn't. That relationship between the machines and the fake reality absolutely comes straight off the pages of the description of these entities go under names like Archons. Very robotic, very non-organic, not really alive in so many ways. Now, when you then look at where they want to take humans, and it's becoming more and more and more in the public eye, it's being put in movie after movie after movie, it's transhumanism. It's turning humans into being part human and part machine, with all these microchips, these mechanical aids, so you're bigger, stronger, and all the rest of it. I mean, the whole Schwarzenegger stuff within the Terminator movies and all this business, it was all the transhumanism agenda being passed off as entertainment to the conscious mind, but implanting very deep programs and perception programs within the subconscious mind. There's an organization in America called DARPA, which is the technological and other.
That's the Defense Advanced Research Projects.
Yeah, it's the defense the Pentagon's development and technological development arm. It is one of the most sinister organizations on the planet, and I noticed that its head a few months ago left to get a job with Google, which I thought was extremely significant. Anyway, what they are doing now and bringing things to fruition increasingly is they are funding to extraordinary amounts of money corporations to develop these cyborgs, not just for military purposes, but in general. And this cyborg society is being promoted and sold all the time. And the closer we get to machines, Vinny, the closer we get to them. They are diminishing us. We think, oh, yeah, I'm going to have this machine, and then I'll be able to pick up this enormous weight. Well, congratulations, round of applause. Why don't you just get a truck to do it? But do it. I want to do it. Yeah. And now you're close to the controlling force. And this is the other point, very important. One of the other things that he said about these entities in these writings is that they cannot stay. And I've been saying this for years about what I call the reptilians, which are all the same thing. They cannot enter our atmosphere and stay for very long because it's, well, for want of a word, alien to them. This is another reason why they can't just come in.
Have you ever seen the movie Fallen?
No.
No. Okay, the premise of the film is there's an entity called Azazel, and it possesses a person, and he can transmit himself through touch. He can transmit or something like that. But if he's killed inside a body, he can only last one breath and float through the air, and he has to be able to get into another entity, otherwise he dies.
Well, I mean, that is the theme, really. And so many themes of all this you find in movies because it's what they call preemptive programming. It's putting into the subconscious a scenario. This is why you see so many Orwellian fascist dictatorship worlds of the future in movies these days. They're injecting that program into the subconscious so that we will play it out, because it becomes our sense of perception. And what our sense of perception does is it manifests that experience, unless that, you know, we intervene with consciousness. But I've been ticking off for years and years and years the increasing numbers of sources of radiation that humans are subjected to. You can look at the electrical system, the computer system, the mobile phone system, the communication systems. You can look at smart meters, which is creating another radiation field in your home and business 24/7.
We're bathing in it.
Yeah, exactly. And then you look at things like Fukushima, which I do not think for a second was an accident. I think that whole tale was a massive bloody lie. And you know, back in the 90s, I met a lady in Oxford or near Oxford, and she was quite elderly at the time, and she was an Oxford don. But one of her specialities was nuclear power, and she'd worked in major nuclear power organizations in Britain, governmental organizations, and she'd written many papers on this stuff. And she also was a fascinated researcher in her spare time of the manipulations of British intelligence. And she obviously came across, when you investigate different organizations within this this web, you come across the same names in different areas, and you think, well, what are you doing here? And then you're somewhere else. What are you doing here? And the name that she kept coming up with was Rothschild. And of course, you know, the House of Rothschild, as I've been writing my books all these years, is a major expression of this network, not least in banking, but far more than banking.
In New Zealand, you go into the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, and there's a giant red shield behind the front reception desk.
Well, there you go. Red shield, Rothschild, red sign, yeah. And that's where the name came from. And, you know, what I'm talking at Wembley Arena in October, and I'm going to – it's going to be about 9 hours long. The event's about 11, 12 hours long, but I'm talking about 9 hours. And what I'm going to do is connect so many dots, it's unbelievable. And one of them will be the true background to things like the red shield and a lot of these symbols, which are all very, very relevant and can very simply be put together to show a pattern and what they really mean. But what she said about nuclear power is that she knew for a fact from her work over the years that it was the Rothschilds that introduced nuclear power. And if the Rothschilds are behind it, Vinny, then it's part of the agenda. And what we, some people are now starting to look and go, hold a second, what have we done? All over the planet are how many must there be now across the world? Nuclear bombs, potentially, called nuclear power stations. And, you know, some of the recent reports of investigations into them, not least in America, have been, you know, take you aback in terms of the state of some of them. In terms of leaking radiation and potentially worse. And when Fukushima went off, given I've been following this for so long, it was such a gift to this radiation agenda that I thought, no way, this can be an accident, or it's amazing coincidence if it is. And I don't think it was for a second. And what Fukushima has done and continues to do is pour radiation into the atmosphere and into the sea. Now, this is the question, Vinny. If you're looking at energetic beings, which on one level are electromagnetic beings, i.e. radiation beings, and they can't enter your atmosphere because it is not compatible to them, they can enter it, but they can't stay for long, then if you want to stay for longer, then you need to change the atmosphere. What are they doing? They're radiating the atmosphere. Not only that, a report by a committee of the European Parliament has no power. European Union's run by the bureaucrats, but at least they have the ability to put a report together. And it was in the 1990s, and it was about this technology in Alaska and around the world now, increasingly, called HAARP, which bounces radio waves of very, very great power into the ionosphere and the upper atmosphere and bounces them back to Earth and can manipulate the weather. No way that incredible drought in a America through the summer, which has devastated small farmers and growers, exactly what they want, get them off the land so the corporations control the land and the food chain.
Agenda 21, chemtrail activity all over the place.
Absolutely right. You look at all the ways the American fascist state is removing people from the land and destroying their ability to farm and to...
And in fact, that reminds me of something. You know how, like, you're from England, I'm from New Zealand, and I really kind of feel like we got to stand behind the Americans at this point in a large degree. You know what I'm saying? Like, in an old sort of World War II sense of the word, but it's like they are the big domino. If America falls, if that entrepreneurial spirit, if that whole idea of the Constitution and all of that kind of thing, the whole independence and creativity aspect, if it falls, you know, what then?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. You know, America is being systematically destroyed, and it's for a simple reason, really. Well, many reasons, but some key reasons. If you are going to have a world government, which they want, and a world army, and the world government dictates to everyone on the planet and the world army imposes the will of the world government, then you cannot have superpowers with the military and financial might to say no to you. So America is being systematically destroyed, and in its destruction, it is being used to carry out the agenda engineered by the forces that are destroying America. I've been saying for years, America is being used to destroy America. If the American government cared about America, it doesn't. It answers to this cabal. It can care less about Americans any more than the hierarchy in Israel could care about Israelis. If they cared about them, they wouldn't outsource jobs all over the world to sweatshops and some of the poorest, most tragic people in the world. They'd say, no, we're going to keep the jobs at home for people that we're supposed to be serving. They wouldn't spend trillions of dollars fighting foreign wars when the country was in financially desperate straits. But they're not fighting wars for America. They're fighting the wars for the cabal that controls those that control America. And so what we're seeing is the systematic destruction of the United States. And part of it is destroying what Americans call the middle class, destroying the small business people, the small farmers, the entrepreneurs that are not part of this greater cabal. They want rid of them, just like supermarkets want rid of small shopkeepers so that they can have all the trade and no one else can have anything else. It's all part of the same mentality, the same way of doing it. And what we've had in Britain this summer is a tremendous amount of rain. I've just been reading, they're claiming it's the wettest summer in Britain for 100 years. And interestingly, when you look at the weather explanation from the weather people of why, they say it's the jet stream is acting strangely. Instead of the weather coming from America across the Atlantic, westerly, across the United Kingdom and out into Scandinavia and Europe, it's basically getting to Britain, and then it's there's a kink in it, in the jet stream, and it's basically going to and fro. Therefore, when a wet weather system comes over Britain, it doesn't drop a bit and move on. It just stays around and drops the flipping lot. And when you look again at this report by the Committee of the European Parliament in the 90s, it looked at HAARP. It asked for Americans and NATO people to come and give evidence and be questioned about it. They refused because they're law unto themselves. But it said, A, that HAARP was not just bouncing radio waves after the ionosphere. It was punching holes in it and letting in cosmic radiation that would normally be defended against. The other thing it said, one of many things it said, is HAARP has the potential to change the nature of the jet stream and thus change the weather over Britain and Europe. And weather manipulation is a piece of cake. It really is when you realize that you're just changing the energetic field and the flow of the energy. You're changing the weather, and that's what Hart can do. Another thing that I found, Vinny, when I was researching this for my last book in the same area, is that I didn't know that in the 50s, the Americans and the Russians too, but to a lesser extent, were exploding nuclear devices in the Van Allen Belt. And what this report, the European Parliament report, said was that it had subsequently cost trillions of dollars in the space program because they had to spend far more to get craft through the Van Allen Belt, they say, far quicker than they would before they did this, because of the effect of the radiation on the craft and the inhabitants.
And the Van Allen Belt is the thing that protects us from all that fracking cosmic radiation, isn't it?
Well, it's adding to the change in the atmosphere and the outer regions of the planet, where they are changing the nature of its radiation state, thus its energetic state, thus it is becoming more and more compatible to these entities. I mean, I don't know whether you saw the movie. I don't watch movies much unless they're part of my work. But back in the 90s, I wrote a movie called The Arrival.
Yeah.
Arrival 2, I thought, was appalling. But Arrival 1 with Charlie Sheen was very, very significant in its storyline. For those who haven't seen it, it was of a non-human race had taken over places like NASA and governments, etc., by hiding behind human form. So people thought that they were human because they look human, but behind the human form, this is what I'm saying is happening, I've been saying for years is happening, was a something of a reptilian-type entity that was very, very not human. And one of the things they were doing, because during the movie, you know, they kept cutting to news reports where they were talking about this massive drought and this heat wave, and, oh, my goodness me, what's going on? And the story in The Arrival was that these entities, using their positions in these institutions to change the atmosphere of the planet so it was more compatible with them. That is what is going on. And this is why, you know, when you think, you know, where we started out in this chat, Vinny, and where we've gone, this is the depth that we need to start to understand to get a grasp on what's happening. And if we go into some ways of turning this around, you know, people talk, the Bible talks about the seven deadly sins and all that stuff, and these the way that we respond and the hatred and the manipulation and that goes on between humans. Well, I'm not saying that humans are perfect and that none of that would go on at all. But what these writings about the Archons talk about is the fact that what the Archons do, these mind parasites, is that they take a human error of some kind, and then they accentuate it, they expand it. They, for instance, a simple thing, they would take what they call an error, which is, say, an argument between two people about something. But they would, because the argument now exists, so they can now twist the argument because it's created.
Wait a second. It's like the reptilian brain response. You ever said something to somebody that's like really, really mean and cruel or something, and you know for a fact that if you'd breathed through and counted to 10, you wouldn't have said it? Is that kind of the way that they think, the way that they operate?
Exactly that. And so they'll take a conflict and they'll turn it into a war. They'll take an argument, turn it into a fight. So it's accentuating error. Not only accentuating it, but making it so the error is never corrected. So you have an imbalance, and like you say, you could take a deep breath and say, "Oh, I'm really sorry." Of course, that happens, but often it doesn't. The error is never corrected, and that applies over the great swathe of human life and human behavior, and thus the reptilian brain and its responses, it all comes into this. Because here's an interesting thing. Given what I've been writing about over the years, these Gnostic writings found in Egypt in the 1940s talk about reptilian entities in terms that they are the expression of the archons, and also about other entities which, when you look at the description, are these so-called gray entities that are the classic extraterrestrial in movies and books and stuff. They therefore are accentuating this imbalance, distorting human behavior for many reasons. Distorting human behavior means divide and rule is much easier, but the distortion of human behavior and the distortion of human emotions means that we're generating the energy of fear, of anger, of hatred, of resentment, of frustration, of anxiety, and they feed off this energy. That's what they do.
It means they're making us more like them, and to a narcissist, there is no higher goal.
Exactly. And this is why, the same personality types, the narcissistic, sociopathic, psychopathic personality types are now being recruited, because what's been happening is that as the centuries and the thousands of years has passed, these archons have been working to get more and more control of the human mind and the human emotional response. And in the last 200 years, they've really gone for it. And so they have managed to get their personality type into positions of power. You mentioned earlier, Vinny, and it's absolutely right, that wherever you go in the world almost now, you see the same personalities in politics. I mean, Mitt Romney and Barack Obama may present a different image, but they're the same personality. There's a great front page on a satirical magazine in Britain called Private Eye. After David Cameron, the current Prime Minister of Britain, started to come to prominence and became Prime Minister and became leader of the Conservative Party, rather, before he became Prime Minister. And the front page had Tony Blair's picture next to Cameron's picture, and the headline was, "First Human Face Transplant, a Success." Cameron is a mirror of Blair. Blair is the blueprint in so many ways, because Obama is a mirror of Blair in terms of the blueprint. But you find it everywhere. And this personality type is now running politics, and the personality type they want to run law enforcement is becoming increasingly obvious. And in the dark suits, you look at the cold, callous, arrogant, nature of so many government administrators, all levels of government, down into local government, that you find now. This is the archontic energy, the archontic personality coming into being. And they want, you're right, to pull us into a situation where we're more and more like them, machine-like, robotic, unthinking, and also callous, cold, and uncaring. And
it's because they understand themselves and they can predict their own behavior, but they can't predict ours, or a free thinking human's one.
Well, this is one of the things that again I've been pointing out for a long time, is that indeed you can find this in some of the writings of this network. They are not only terrified of what people call mavericks, they don't understand them. Don't know what they're going to do next, never mind anyone else, because what do mavericks do? A true maverick works on intuition, follows intuition. It's about following, I just know I've got to be there tomorrow. Instinct. You don't go through, if I go, but I've got an appointment, and no, I know I've got to be there. That's the true innate intelligence, which they want to switch off. They have done it to a large extent. They want to pull people from heart intelligence, the true multidimensional level of our intelligence, innate intelligence, into the brain, which is a very, very low level of intelligence. It's just the computer. Again, here we go. It's pulling people into the computer, the robotic level, which is what they kind of want us to be, because they understand that they can work with that. They don't, because humans in their true open-hearted, open-minded state are so different and have so many more gifts and so much more potential than these archonic inorganic entities have. They do not understand. They're frightened of this potential and have you. Therefore, they're trying to pull us down into where they're at.
Isn't it like they need to be needed? Kind of like that scene in V for Vendetta where he says, I want you to remind people why they need us.
Yeah. See, the bankers, and if you're talking about another area of these writings about these archons, another common theme, certainly very much emphasized in the Gnostic writings, is that they are parasites. They feed off humans because they have no ability to create themselves in the same way. Thus, they have to feed off our creativity. The banking system, which is of their creation and the creation by them through this network of families that are basically these archons in embodiment, the banking system is the classic archontic parasitical system, which is feeding off the life force energy of human beings that is dictating choice, it's dictating possibility, it's suppressing potential. How many people in the world would love to be expressing their potential in another way and their creativity in another way, but they haven't got the money to do it because the system runs is dictating money. It's there to feed and fund the projects that they want humans to focus upon, more and more money, making more and more things, more and more possessions, and all the rest of it, while at the same time suppressing real creativity. Why? Because we'll only fund that which we control, the creation of money, this non-existent money called credit. We will only fund what makes the society the way we want it, and we will not fund anything that challenges that society, like setting free human creativity. I've got a quote in front of me, Vinny, here, which is, I think, very telling. It's I was reading this article. It was not about idiots, none of it. It was just about a Swiss clairvoyant called Anton Steiger and his life. That's all. And in the middle of it, he was talking about some of the things that he experiences, you know, when he sees things that are not there to be seen normally by the conscious mind. And out of nowhere in this article came this quote, which is so significant of what we're talking about. He said, "When I see people in business or politics who are particularly trapped by the material world, for example, I notice that they no longer have any light bodies at all. In many of these people, the point of light at the heart chakra, the heart vortex, which is otherwise always present, is no longer visible to me. What do we call these people? Heartless. Instead, I see something like a layer of shiny tar around them, in which a monstrous being in the shape of a lizard can be distinguished. When such people speak on television, for example, I see a crocodile shape manifesting around the person like a concave mirror. I don't see the light of their throat or forehead chakras."
Never smile at a crocodile.
So what they do is that they attach themselves. It's an age-old theme of possession. Mm. And these bloodlines that they use to run politics and banking and the system in general, they are more possessed than the general population. So they do things you know, in line with the agenda far more than the general population.
Well, it's interesting that he mentions business, media, and politics, because the American Medical Journal actually did a release on psychopaths, what kind of people they are, and they said they're generally very nice, friendly, enchanting people when you first meet them, but don't really have a whole lot of depth to their personality, and not real long-lasting relationships out of some preface like a business or something like that. And the three most likely industries you are to find psychopaths: business, media, politics.
Yeah. You've just described Tony Blair, of course.
Yeah, and
the other personalities in politics.
Well, and again, you know, we're like John Key, our prime sinister, you know. I of course, have to call him the prime sinister, because he just really is, you know, Wall Street banker and the whole business thing. And he was at this business meeting group, I think, an investment group or whatever. They're doing government business, divvying out contracts. You know, the way the scumfracks kind of do it in the Council on Foreign Relations business, yeah? And he's saying that what they do with the National Party now with New Zealand is they're taking a very, very moderate approach. And by taking a moderate approach and taking this, that, and the other from a lot of different small directions and taking little steps, it actually adds up to a lot. And the first thing that occurred to me is exactly what you said, the totalitarian tiptoe, right?
Yeah.
Like that, they're very open about it. And that's the arrogance part of the narcissism, because all psychopaths are narcissistic, but not all narcissists are psychopaths, right? But they always love to just tell everybody and basically rub it in your face. And have you noticed that no matter how big, bad, evil, or strong some kind of force on Earth gets, it's never above reproach, and eventually it always falls. And I thought about the human potential to kind of understand what God is, and I thought about it like this. It's like a macro organism, like one cell in my body. There's about 5 trillion of them, and they make up me, the macro organism known as Vinny. To all those cells, as far as I'm concerned, I'm God, and I'm one cell on the Earth in the solar system. So as far as I'm concerned, the Earth is kind of God, and we're all cells that are connected with it, and we've all got our own little latent psychic connections, and it's like a wireless cloud, a field, if you will, that's up there. And sometimes you're capable of picking up on what's there and downloading it into you. That is sometimes where the possession takes hold, I think. And you had an experience with ayahuasca, where you got to talk with one of these, what I think would be kind of perhaps a representation or a voice of the macro entity or the guy or whatever it is you call him. And I came up with a joke for you, and I wanted to do this before we finished up the interview. What do you call somebody who has a bad reaction to ayahuasca and gets really angry?
Go on.
Ayahuasca the Grouch.
Huh?
Yeah. But anyway, I was thinking about the time that we get to spend on Earth. And it's like in history, you never actually get to experience all of history. Yet time is just this one moment. And it's a consistent one. It stretches on throughout history, and it will continue to stretch on throughout eternity. So in a way, we get to share a moment with everybody who's ever lived or whoever will. And what I wanted to kind of round off the interview with, David, was to ask you, that said, this moment that you've had to share on the Earth thus far, what has been your overall impression?
Well, I think the time thing is very important. I think time, as we perceive it, is an illusion. It's part of this fake reality, the Matrix, and it's one of the great ways that we are controlled and suppressed, is this obsession with and slavish service to time, which, of course, is a nonsense. I mean, you know, you go across an invisible line in the ocean one way and you're into yesterday, and the other way into tomorrow. I mean, it's just a joke, and that line isn't even straight. It's all manufactured, and I think it's a way, a big way that we're controlled, because, you know, we age because we perceive we age, and we go through this cycle of aging. Oh, you shouldn't be doing that at your age. oh, you're getting older now and all this stuff. And it's a program. We're just playing it through and with this slavish obsession with time. But the impression that I've got, well, there are or there is this human race which has infinite potential to do extraordinary things, but it is asleep, and it has been put systematically to sleep. You know, if you walk into a library, a massive library, you can access the knowledge of all the books, or you can spend your life reading one or two, and that's it. And humans, because of the way the system is structured, spend their lives, if that, reading one or two books, symbolically. And the whole infinite library of consciousness is denied us because we're so focused, attached, programmed to perceive only through the five senses. And if they can detach you from the greater self, and they can self-identify you as Charlie Jones or Ethel Smith, that's who you are, and hold you in the five senses, then they're giving you one way of getting the information to try to get a fix on who you are, where you are, and the nature of life. And that's through the eyes and the ears. And the information coming the other way is from the education system and the media and science and all this other stuff, which is controlled by this system. So humanity is disconnected from its true self. And then that which has been disconnected is programmed to see the world in a certain way. And what humans are in very, very large numbers, although more and more are beginning to wake up now, is like if you symbolize consciousness as the guy sitting in the seat at the mouse and the keyboard, and you symbolize body mind, the conscious mind, as the computer, then if you have those two in unison, then you have everything you need. You have the body mind that gives you direct interaction with its frequency range we call visible light, that means you can, you know, pick up a glass and interact with it. And you've also got the bigger picture being fed to you from those levels of yourself that are not encased and caught in the headlights of an oncoming visible light frequency range. But once you take that connection away, and this is what the system's designed to do, then the guy now, consciousness, he's smacking the mouse and he's smacking the keyboard. The computer's not responding. The computer's now going around the internet deciding what it makes of it and what it's all about, without that greater self to give it the greater perspective. So basically, it's walking around in a fog. It's in this world and it's of it, and it's being fed within this world fake realities and fake senses of identity to program it to behave and respond in a certain way. This is why so many people walk around in a bewildered state. I, you know, so often, Vinny, I look at people and I kind of look at their face, I look at their body language and their demeanor, and I see this massive question mark above their head. It's like, who am I? Where am I? What's going on? Who are you? Where am I? What's going on? And that's because they're isolated in the five senses. And yet, and this is why we have the world we do, because if you're isolated in the five senses, they cannot see the fact that there is not empty space between you and me and this and that. There is a unified energy field beyond human sight that connects everything. These are all like expressions of the same universal field of awareness. But from the conscious mind's point of view, there is no connection. Thus, there is a sense of division. And through that sense of division comes all the ways that we are divided and ruled. Because we think of ourselves as different when we're all the same one. I mean, when soldiers shoot at other soldiers, it's the same consciousness ultimately shooting at itself. But we don't see it like that, because the conscious mind decodes everything as apart from everything else. Thus, Yes, I fight you because you're different from me. And this is what they've done. This is what the whole system's designed to do. So what I see is fantastic, limitless, infinite potential, enormous, infinite, innate intelligence that's been manipulated into a level of sometimes breathtaking stupidity. And it's been done by disconnecting incarnate mind from non-carnate consciousness.
David Icke, thank you so much for giving us some of your valuable time this evening, morning, wherever you may be at this particular point, all of those of you listening. And if you'd like to see more from David Icke, you can go to davidicke.com. And also, please, if you can, get yourself to Wembley Stadium in October and go and see David, because I won't be able to come to see you, David. I would really love to, but I just want to see the pictures or the video of the 40, 60,000 odd people, or even more, just packed into there to see you speak. The energy will be quite nice.
But it will be, for the subject matter, it will be, there'll be a lot of people there. There'll be many thousand people. There'll be thousands of people there, but it's going to be interesting.
Indeed. David Icke, thank you very much for your time.
All the best.
I have this feeling, man, because you know there's the handful of people actually run everything. That's true. It's provable. Handful, very small elite run and own these corporations, which include the mainstream media. I have this feeling who's ever elected president, like Clinton was, no matter what your promises you promise on the campaign trail, blah, 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 when you win, you go into this smoky room with the 12 industrialist capitalist scum f***s who got you in there, and you're in this smoky room, and this little film screen comes down, and a big guy in a cigar, roll the film, and it's a shot of a Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before. That looks suspiciously off the grassy knoll. And then the film, the screen goes up and the lights come up and they go to the new president. Any questions? Just what my agenda is. First we bomb Baghdad. You got it.
Are you tormented with anxiety, depression, or other chronic symptoms of less than perfect health? In 2010, a few people got to participate in a groundbreaking discovery. Dr. Carolyn Dean, world-renowned authority on natural health, has recently patented a technology that is straight out of science fiction. She invited me to try this product called the RNA Drops, and within 12 hours of taking them, I could feel an amazing sense of bliss. And I have since watched my troubles with depression and other health issues vanish into freedom and happiness again. Listen to hours of testimonials and get your trial bottle of RNA Drops today at www.rnafreebottle.com. That's www.rnafreebottle.com. There are only a few hundred bottles available, so hurry now. RNA Drops.
Are you completely fed up with being dependent on those fat cat electricity monopolies that raise your rates again and again? Are you terrified about how you'll keep your home and family safe when a power crisis happens? 123/power.com has set up a free video presentation that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they are, incompetent lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up, and you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. The video at 123/power.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret to slash your power bill and beat the electricity monopoly for good. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123/power.com and discover one weird trick to cut your power bill and protect your home. Easy to remember, 123/power.com. Go watch the video now before they shut it down. Again, that's 123/power.com.
I have this feeling, man, because you know there's the handful of people actually run everything. That's true. It's provable. Handful, very small elite run and own these corporations, which include the mainstream media. I have this feeling who's ever elected president, like Clinton was, no matter what your promises you promise on the campaign trail, blah, 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 when you win, you go into this smoky room with the 12 industrialist capitalist scum f***s who got you in there, and you're in this smoky room in this little film screen comes down, and a big guy in a cigar, roll the film. And it's a shot of a Kennedy assassination from an angle you've never seen before. That looks suspiciously off the grassy knoll. And then the film, the screen goes up, and the lights come up, and they go to the new president. Any questions? Just what my agenda is. First we bomb Baghdad. You got it.
My name is Sean David Morton, and in 2010, I was called into the offices of the most high-powered law firm in the world on an estate matter of the utmost importance. After signing contracts promising I'd never reveal the identity of the people involved, I inherited the journals of a man that had spent 40 years in and become director of the global shadow government. It was the Holy Grail with information on the Unified Field Theory, the Roswell crash, the Philadelphia Experiment, the Sigma Treaty, Nazi super science, the Montauk Project, Area 51, the Dulce Mesa Wars, and treaties with extraterrestrial races and the back engineering of their hardware. But mostly, it had to do with the development of technology that would allow us to travel through time and fight a deadly alien threat that was only now on its way here to destroy our world. Read the book that I have risked my life to write. For the first time ever, read The Truth About It All. Sands of Time, the runaway bestseller by Sean David Morton, available in signed limited edition hardback only at StrangeUniverseRadio.com.
Read this book and never be the same.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.